The Asian Classics Institute presents The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in March of 1998.
This is the beginning of Class 5.
Space for next course, but it's a little tight, so if anyone can find anything, be nice. We pay rent and all that. There's one sponsor that has an organization that might be purchasing a building and said we could use it if we could help find the building. So it would be like a church with an adjoining building or something like that. Church, synagogue, theater, something like that. So if anyone... You know, if you're just walking around and you see something, sign put up for sale or something.
What about the limelight?
I would love to have it. No, I mean anything like that. Give the ideas to John Stillwell. Okay? Give the ideas to John or to Aura. But you know, the way we found this place was that somebody was walking by it one day and asked, and it's worked out okay. We looked at other places that cost like $2,000 a night. This place is much cheaper. And, you know, so if you have any leads, you know, let John know. And we're still looking for that. There's no reading tonight. We tried nobly to finish it and couldn't do it. So you have to make very good notes tonight, all right? I'm warning you, all right? Okay. Also, one more announcement. Monday night class is a daily practice class. We go over how to do your daily practice. And it's really good because you need that in addition to this course. You can't have one without the other, really. Sometimes we have extra time at the end of those classes. Like this week, we had extra time. So if you have any burning questions about this course, you're welcome to ask them. We opened it up last week. We did about an hour of practice and meditation, and then we had a half hour, 45 minutes of open discussion about this class and other issues. So if you have any questions that you'd like to ask, I think that might be better, then we don't have to stay too late. If you have a really quick question that's good for this class, go ahead and try to ask, okay, during the class. And if it's something I forgot or something like that, I'll go ahead and talk about it. But if you have a more complicated question like, what was the whole third reading about? you know, yeah. Try to come Monday night, maybe. And we'll have a little open question and answer thing after the meditation. So I'll, you know, we'll trade, you know. You have to meditate for an hour and then I'll answer questions, okay? All right? It's a bribe. Okay? All right, here we go. You finished a lot of the basic Dura topics. You finished the outline of existence. You finished Chichye Dak about generals and specifics. And then you finished, what was last week, Gyunje? You finished cause and effect. There's one more. What was that? No? We only did three? What was the first class? Oh, the first class was the importance of doing it. Okay. And that's what you finished so far. We're going on now to... You're doing like... Don't forget you're doing 8 years in about 3 months. So you're real special. And... say, Yu.
Yu.
Yu Chen.
Yu.
Yu.
Yu
Chen. That's the next important subject I'd like to go over. Yu means objects. And then you see the same word repeated here, and Chen means possessing. So that which possesses an object is a subject. Okay? So objects and subjects is the next... is the next little subject we're going to study. Okay. This is really important for the study of how do you perceive things. This is the excuse for the logic scriptures to get into Buddhist psychology. So everything you ever wanted to know about Buddhist psychology. It's a huge subject. I intend to do it as an auxiliary course in the next 2 years. It's called Sem Semchung. It's a whole thing. There's 51 mental functions. It's really cool to study it. There's no way we can cover it in detail tonight. We're going to do the rough outline of it, and then I'll do it as a separate course, a short course, like a 3-day course or something like that. But we'll go through the basics tonight. It's very important to know how does the mind work, how does the mind perceive objects. It's especially important in the study of emptiness. If you study Yu Yu Chen properly, you can eliminate about half the explanations you ever heard of emptiness. Okay? Like some kind of idea that the mind sinks into the object and they become one, that the subject and the object become one. Ideas like that are totally false. They're not correct. And you can get a better appreciation of it after you study Yu Yu Chen. So people who've had this when they're 13 years old in the monastery would never even listen to one of those lectures. I mean, they'd just walk in, they'd say, no, well, this guy's crazy. You know, the Yu Yu Chen is separate. Every Buddhist philosopher ever lived said that. You know, in ancient India, in Tibet, nobody ever said they melted into each other or something like that. There are expressions like pouring water into water. That's a different thing. There are expressions like non-duality. That's a different thing. But it doesn't mean that somehow you become emptiness. You are a lopo. You are a changing thing. You are mitakpa. Emptiness is takpa. You could never become emptiness. I mean, they're just totally different things. You are changing from millisecond to millisecond, and you always will. Even after you get enlightened, you will continue to change from millisecond to millisecond. Emptiness never changes. Okay? And just basically, that's... if you study Yu Yu Chen, you wouldn't even have that wrong idea. And you see that wrong idea everywhere, okay? You see it written in all kinds of books all over the place. And it's just false, okay? That's one of the things, one of the applications of studying Yu Yu Chen, okay? We're going to go on to the definition of a Yu. Say, Teme.
Teme.
Shalwa.
Shalwa.
Chawa.
Chawa.
Teme.
Shalwa.
Chawa.
Chawa.
Tema means, as you know, a valid perception. How many valid perceptions have you had today? No, the point is 99.999999% of all your perceptions are valid. Okay, what's not a valid perception? When you're completely drunk and you see something, when you're on LSD and you see something, when you're overcome with jealousy and you think everyone's out to get you, you know, when you're moving in a subway and the other subway's moving and it looks like, you know, you have these illusions of motion and stuff like that. Those are examples of a tsemin. But 99.99% of all your perceptions are tsema. They are valid. Are they correct? Valid means given the data you have at your disposal, they're okay. Correct means does the nature of the object correspond to what you believe about it? Majjhimika says you've never had one in your life until you see emptiness directly. But don't feel depressed. Everyone's the same, okay? Probably. Shalwar chawa means that which is apprehended, okay? That which is apprehended by a valid perception. Shalwa and jalwa can mean to be weighed, to be judged, like that. And it means here to be apprehended. Anything which is apprehended or perceived by a valid perception is an object. Okay. Now I'll give you some synonyms. Say yul, yepa, shalja. Yul, yepa, shalja. Yul means objects. Okay, objects. All the objects in the world. Okay. Yupa means existing thing. Shelja means anything you can apprehend or perceive with your mind. And these three are synonyms. Okay? That's kind of a big statement. You see? The definition or a description of existence is anything you can perceive with a valid perception. So, the word all the objects in the world that you could perceive, all the existing objects in the world, and all the things in the world that you could ever apprehend are the same thing. They're all the same thing. It's another word for everything that exists. Okay? These are all equal, the same thing. Okay? So yul is very important. Every existing object in the universe is a yul, or an object of somebody's mind. Okay? There's a lot of cosmic dust out towards Pluto. So who's seeing it? The unomniscient being, a Buddha. Okay, so that it's a kyaba in Buddhism. Every existing object is being perceived by somebody's valid perception. Okay. Yules can be divided into two types. Say ngopo, takpa. Ngopo. Lupo means, you know, a working thing. Anything that performs a function. Okay? Anything that does something. According to Buddhism, anything that changes, anything that does something, it's the same thing. Okay? Lupo. By doing something, you change. By changing, you do something. Okay? Takpa means an unchanging thing. Okay? And all yules, anything you could ever perceive in the universe, anything you could ever put your mind on is either belongs to nupos or to takpas. Okay? It's either a working thing or an unchanging thing. And working thing and changing thing and produced thing and made thing and caused thing are all the same thing. Okay? You could say mitakpa, the text says nupo. I think they're trying to make a point. Okay? But it's the same thing to say mitakpa and takpa. Same thing. Okay? All mitakpas, all lupas, all working things can be divided into five. We're working our way down the categories, right? These are basic Buddhist concepts that you need to go anywhere later in your study, especially about emptiness. Okay? Say pumbo.
Pumbo.
Nga.
Nga.
Pumbo.
Pumbo.
Nah. Pumbo means a pile of something, like a pile of leaves, or a pile of dirt, or a pile of rocks, or something like that. In Tibetan, it's called pumbo. In Sanskrit, it's skanda. Okay, skanda. Nga means five. Okay, nga means five. And this is the famous five skandas, or five heats. They are five parts of a person. every person is made up of five different parts. Each one of those parts includes many, many members. And so they're called heaps. I mean, it might even be better to say it's a mountain. You see what I mean? It's like when you say it's a mountain of snow on the street, or there's a mountain of dirt on the street, or, you know, meaning a huge pile of something. That's the meaning of Pumbo. The Abhidharma Kosha first chapter says, Pungdan kego rikidun, Pungdan kego rikidun, Pumbo keche kam nam yin, which means, if you want to know why Pumbos are called Pumbos, or why Skandhas are called Skandhas, Pungdan kego rikidun, because it, in the sense of many things piled together. That's all. It's a group including many objects, okay? And we're going to go through the five. These are all the yules in the world. If you cover these five, you covered all the yules in the world. How many yules are there? Exactly as many as there are existing objects in the universe, okay? So it's interesting. In this presentation, you can divide every existing object into the five parts of a person. Okay, here's the first one. Say sukh.
Sukh.
Okay. We had one sukh already. And it was, we translated it as physical thing, right? Physical thing. And the definition of it was sukh suruma. How do you define blue? What's the definition of blue? Anything you point to and say, look, this is what I mean when I say blue, okay? That's sukh suruma sukhitseni. Definition of a physical thing is, you know, what's the definition of square? What's the definition of round? What's the definition of blue? You have to show it to somebody and say, that's blue. That's what I mean when I say blue, okay? And this physical matter, sukh, is often translated as form. Why? Because normally it refers to what you can see with your eyeball, shapes and colors. So if you're studying Buddhist philosophy, you have to be able to draw the distinction between general sukh and specific sukh. General sukh is any physical thing, smells, sounds, tangible objects, tastes, and things that you can see. Okay? In one sense, it can mean the object of the eye, meaning only colors and shapes. Okay? In this case, it's all physical matter. It's all physical matter. Okay? The first heap, the first part of a person, is all physical matter. There are two types. Okay? Say chi sukh, nangi sukh. Chi sukh, nangi sukh. Chi sukh means outer physical matter, outside physical matter. Nangi sukh means inside physical matter. There's a big debate in the Abhidharma Kosha about what makes outside and what makes inside. Okay. If you define it as anything where your consciousness covers, then there's this huge debate about the end of your fingernails and your hair. You know, at what point does your hair become not sentient? You see what I mean? If you have, okay? But at what point can you feel when somebody touches your hair? You see what I mean? And there's a big debate about it in the Abhidharma Kosha. And that the outer physical form would be the chair or the building or something like that. Inner physical form would be, for example, your eye faculty, the cells inside your eyeball that can detect color and shape. Okay, what do you call it? Optic nerve. Okay, the optic nerve would be an example of inner physical matter. Okay, but if you think about it, and this is something you have to think about carefully. The wall is part of you also. You see, it's part of your reality. You see, it's hard for me to divide between the environment and my body, right? I mean, where does my body stop? Does it stop where I've stopped touching things? So the end of my fingernails is not part of me anymore? Or does it stop where I can see the edge of my skin? Or where does me stop? You see, and in this presentation in the logic scriptures, they don't draw a distinction for the heap of matter between the wall and my body. Okay? It's just, it's still part of your experience. It's still part of what you call you. And you have to get used to that. When we study the Heart Sutra at Connecticut, it'll be Sukhmet, Torahmet, Dushimet, Dushimet, Namashipamet, Mikmet, Nawamet, Namet, Chimet, Numet, Yimet, Sumet, Damet, Chimet, Roshimet, Chimedo. And it goes like that. You go through all the existing parts of you. And it gets real hard to distinguish between you and the wall. Meaning, it's as much a part of your experience as your body is, isn't it? You know, it's not connected. If someone hits the wall with a hammer, you don't say, ouch, unless it's your house or something. but generally speaking, it's still part of your experience. You know, when you describe yourself or your being, a lot of that is the outside physical matter. And in this presentation, that's considered part of your Rupa Skanda, part of your first heap that makes up what we call you. Okay. And eventually, with the Heart Sutra presentation, you will have to see the emptiness of all of those things, of each of the five heaps. You must study the five heaps. Why? It allows you to deconstruct yourself. You see what I mean? If you can break yourself down into five parts, and you're looking for a self-existent you in each one, and you don't find it, then your self-existent you probably isn't there. Okay, so the exercise, especially in the first chapter of the Abhidhamma Kosha, is to divide all of reality into five parts called you. And then examine each one and see if you can find a self-existent you, and you won't. And then you can eliminate that possibility. But you have to... There's a difference between what is objectively the five parts of you and this thing that you feel is you. You know what I mean? If you're really objective about it, you are a bag full of certain mental parts and certain physical parts. There's no independent you aside from those parts. You see what I mean? And you have to get used to that. You've been living in your body so long, and you've been in your mind so long, that you think of it as Robin, or you think of it as Tony, or whatever you are, Thomas. You know, you think of yourself that way. But if you're objective about it, you are just a pile of pieces, Pumbo, you know. And there is no you there if you're really objective about it. You know, there's just a bunch of parts there. And you have to get used to that. That's the exercise in Abhidharma. That's the first chapter is devoted to that, to deconstruct yourself. If you're into the Dakye, it would be like Kusali Tsong, okay? It's the same exercise. You're deconstructing yourself. Okay. And it's the same idea. You're breaking down your parts so that you can get sensitive to the fact. If you really get into the teaching on the five heaps, it's really cool. I mean, go home and find the you. And you've got five places to look at. Like, it's like having five rooms in your house where you're going to look for a pink two-headed 12-foot elephant, right? And you go through each room and you don't find... And then you can say with certainty, there's no pink two-headed purple elephant in my house. And by the way, there never could have been. But it helps to have five rooms to check in, right? It helps to say, my house has five rooms. I checked in all five rooms. It's not there, okay? In the break, okay? Because it's going to be a long one tonight, trust me. Okay. Second one. Say, Torwa?
Torwa.
Torwa? Torwa. Torwa means feeling. Feeling, the capacity of feeling. Okay. This is a mental part of you. Is it still a Pumbo? Yeah, it's Pumbo number two. It's heap number two. Why call it a heap? Well, if you state it simply, you have three kinds of feeling. Good, bad, and in between. Good, bad, and neutral. If you want to get more fancy, good physical feeling, good mental feeling, neutral, bad physical feeling, bad mental feeling. Five. You want to get really fancy? 18. Feeling good about what I see. Feeling neutral about what I see. Okay? Feeling bad about what I see. Feeling good about what I smell, etc., etc. Okay? All six senses. So, Torwa is a big Pumbo. It's a big pile of different events. Okay? Torwa nyongwa o dushi ni tsema zimbe lo yino. That's how it's defined in the Abhidharma Kosha. Sorwa is simply defined as the ability to experience objects. to experience the content of an object. You know, good, bad, or medium, or in between. That's feeling. Okay? We talked about why feeling, you know, there's 51 mental functions in this school that you're in tonight. Okay? Why, out of all 51, Sarva got to be its own category is something we talked about before. Do you remember? What was it? Yeah, Korwe Gyuchi, Rim Gyuchi, Semjin Namle, Tora Dong, Loshi Punju, Dushe Lokshik Pumbo Shan. Okay, that's the first chapter of Abhidharma Kosha. These are separated out and treated separately because feelings are what get you in trouble. It's what causes your suffering. I like this, I don't like this. And then you collect bad karma for the things you like and the things you don't like. Okay? Does that mean you should stop feeling things because they cause you all your trouble? No. Buddhas feel great. And they like it. Okay. Does it mean you shouldn't be attached to your feelings and just let them go on like and observe them? No way. Buddhas very much enjoy the bliss that they have and they're very attached to it. They have no intention of going back to hell or anything like that. Seriously. Okay. That's not true. All those things are not true. Does it mean that in order to get a good feeling you should never commit a bad karma? That's what it means. Yeah. That's what it means. Why not? Because it doesn't work anyway. Okay? That's ignorance. You know, to do something bad to get a good feeling is ignorance. Because that isn't how they come. Okay? That's all it means. Okay? Do Buddhas enjoy the pleasure they... Detong yisu mebe yeshe la nyambar shakne. You know, of course. They love to be in bliss. They would like to get everyone there too. You know, it's not like you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can. You know, Buddhas have their cake and eat it too. Simbutsuki, in the very deep secret teachings, you know, it's like a worm. And that I can't tell you about. Okay. Sorana Dushi. Say Dushi.
Dushi.
Dushi. The Abhidharma Kosha, Tsorwa Nyongwa O Dushi Ni Tsemadzimbe Lo Yino, which means, and this poor word gets mistranslated and mangled and abused all over, okay? Dushe means discrimination. That's all. This is good, this is bad. This is tall, this is short. This is red, this is blue. I like this, I don't like this. Okay, those are all dushe. Why do you imagine dushe got to be a separate category? Oh, second big troublemaker, okay? I like him, I don't like him. I like this, I don't like this. This is mine, this is yours. Okay. Does that mean we should just give up thinking anything is mine or anything is yours? Does it mean that we should ignore the distinction between what hurts us and what is nice? Not at all. Buddhas have dushe. Okay. All living creatures have dushe. Okay. Buddhas can distinguish between this is hell and this is a Buddha paradise, and I want to stay in the Buddha paradise. Okay. Of course they do. Of course they have dushe. This is the bad dushe. This is the dushe that says this is mine. This is yours, and I want yours. Okay? But if you just say, this is mine, and this is yours, and I'm going to collect good karma with mine, and I'm going to collect good karma about yours, then that's fine. There's no problem with that. You don't have to give up discrimination. It's not a goal of Buddhism to be a vegetable somewhere, not wanting to feel anything, and not able to tell the difference between good and bad, or tall and short, and feels good or feels bad. That's not a goal. Obviously, it's not a goal. Okay? And poor American Buddhists who heard about it, you know, they're like trying for 20 years not to feel anything or not to like anything, you know. It's not the point. Buddhas like to be in Buddha paradise, and they would like to free all sentient beings. And they don't like to see us suffer. And they better be able to draw that distinction, okay? Say Duje.
Duje.
Duje is another much mangled word, you know, much abused word. It's heat number 4, right? It's defined like this in the Abhidharma Kosha, Duje Pumbo Shile Shen, which means the fourth heap is everything that's not in the other four heaps. And that's all. Okay? Everything about you that didn't make it into the other four categories, right? We only have four so far, right? There'll be one more. Anything that didn't make it into 1, 2, 3, and 5 is number 4. Okay? What's in there? Well, in this school, there's 49 different mental functions after subtracting feeling and discrimination. Okay? There's Magda is there. Okay? Magda's body is stuck in number 1. Magda's feeling is stuck in number 2. Magda's discriminating is stuck in number 3. Magda's consciousness or awareness is stuck in number 5. But Magda is none of those. She has those, but she's a person. And the person belongs in number 4. Okay? These are all different qualities of a person that aren't included in the other four heaps. Okay? So the Abhidharma Kosha defines this one as, hey, everything else. Okay? And then people say, you know, samskara, what's it? They come up with some really weird translations. I call it other factors. The word duce means factor. You can translate it as other factors. What does factor mean here? Something that acts as a cause. How many parts of you act as a cause? Everything. Why? Because they all perform a function. Okay. That's all. So it just means all the parts of you that didn't make it into the other four parts. I guess technically speaking, your emptiness might be here, but I'm not sure. Okay. That's part of you and it doesn't change. Okay. Was it making it into Duce Gipumbo? Maybe. I don't know. Okay. Number 5. That would make a good debate, by the way. You know, where is your emptiness in this outline? Because it doesn't change. It can't be called a duce. It's not physical. It's not mental. But it's part of you. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. It is a division of mupos. Working things. Say again? No, not all existing things are mupos. Okay. Say namshe. Namshe?
Namshe.
Your awareness, your consciousness. Okay. Americans tend to think of the word mind as equaling the brain, and that's totally wrong, right? Where is your awareness? If I don't say brain and if I don't say mind, but I just say your awareness, where is it? And where did it come from? And why do you have it? And why aren't you like a rock? You know, Frank Zappa says, "Help, I'm a rock." Right? That's an old one. Okay, but like, how do you know that you're not a? I mean, what's the difference between you and a stone, right? I mean, where does this thing come from that you're aware of everything? Where did it come from? Why do you have it? Where is it? You know, is it on the other side of the room or is it here? You know, is it in your refrigerator at home or is it here? Mine already went to bed. I mean, mine is dreaming about my bed, you know. I mean, it's just this general thing that you're aware of everything, that things are happening to you, okay? That you know things, that you're aware of things, okay? Namshe, okay? Awareness. 6 different types. Namshe connected to your eye, namshe connected to your ear, namshe connected to your nose, namshe connected to hearing your own thoughts in your own mind. Okay, so we get 6. 6 different categories. We just finished all existing objects, okay? Now we can go on to Yul Chen. We can go on to all existing subjects. Okay? Yeah. There's not much to say about Takpas. Okay? Emptiness, empty space. The fact that you'll never go to hell again if you reach a certain level. You know. The fact that the sky is blue on this planet, on this day, like that. It's not the function of this class to go into Shidub Gindamshat, which we finished already. The function of this class is to discuss subjects and objects. Right? So that's a rough outline of objects as they treat them in this subject. Now we'll get to subjects. Okay. Say, Rangyu, La, Jukpe, Chö. Rangyu, La, Jukpe, Chö. Rang means its own. Okay, its own. Yul means an object, right? La means in. Okay. Jukpe means, how do I translate that? Engages. Okay. And chur means any existing thing. In Sanskrit, what? Dharma. Okay? Any existing thing which engages in an object is the definition of a subject. Now I ask you a question. You guys are already experts at Shidrup Gindamshat. You had it in class number 2. Right? Okay. It's hot in here. Okay. So, mitapala weyawa mebe echa. Okay. Mitapala yewa mebe echa. Okay. Which means it's too bad that there's no division of changing things, you know. Mitapala yewa mebe echa. You know, that's a shame. Okay. You have 3 choices, okay? I said me, okay, which means there don't exist any divisions of changing things. Now you have 3 choices. Because I said cheer at the end, right? Maybe cheer. Say maybe.
Maybe.
Cheer.
Maybe.
Maybe. Cheer. Okay, I ended with cheer. He heard cheer. So he knows he has 3 choices, okay? If he wants to agree, which should never be the case. I mean, if I'm a good debater, I should bring up something to fight about, right? But suppose I'm like a dumb debater and I brought up something that we didn't fight about. Then he would just repeat the verb, which is meh.
Meh.
Okay? Which means, yeah, I agree. You can't divide changing things at all. There's no divisions of changing things. There's one kind of changing thing and there's not 2 kinds of changing things. Okay? Now, I'm giving you choices, okay? Listen carefully. Okay? Or you can say tag madrup. Say ta madrup. Ta madrup. Which is to say, it's not correct to say there's no divisions to changing things. Okay? That's not correct to say. And then the third one you could say would be kyabha machung, which means, yeah, there's no changing things, but whatever you're trying to get to, forget it. Okay? So which one would you like?
Ta madrup.
Yeah, say ta.
Ta.
Not tak, okay? Tak madrup means I couldn't get the rope to tie the guy up, okay? Tak madru means tak madru means, you know, that's bad, that's not true. Okay, so ta madru.
Ta madru.
Then we learned last class, I come back with a telangir, I come back with a prasangika, I come back with a sarcastic statement, right? Oh, yewa yewa ta. Okay, like say yewa
yewa
yewa ta.
Yewa.
Then you get this disgusted look on your face. Yewa
yewa
ta. You telling me that there are divisions to, I mean, it's a stupid thing to say, but are you telling me that there's divisions to changing things? Like you can divide changing things up? And then you have to like say, yeah, that's what I said, you know? Okay? And that's your logic thing tonight. You say, duh.
Duh.
And you say it with authority, you know? You say, duh.
Duh.
That's what I said, yeah. Duh is the same as duh in dukkham, meaning desire realm. Duh means desire, meaning I agree, I assent. Okay? Duh means that. So you can remember there's a store in the village called dukkham, right? It's dukkham. Right? Duh. Okay? Just think the. Yeah, yeah, da. You're telling me there's a division?
Duh.
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 Okay, duh. Then I say shot. Say shot.
Shot.
Shot. Show me. Let me have it. Okay. Shock is joke. Joke means present them, please. Okay. But it's like, hey, come on. Whip them up. You know, let's go. Okay. Shot. By the way, when you say Tamadrup, you better have your show ready already. Right? If you say there are divisions, I disagree that there's no divisions. I say, you telling me there are divisions? Say, yeah, it's a show. And you better have them ready right then, you know, or else you should not have said Dagmar Du. You should have said, I didn't hear that. What did you say? And that's la. Say la.
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 La means I didn't quite catch what you said. And meanwhile, your mind is going like, you know, what should I answer? What should I answer? Okay. But you shouldn't never give your answer until you're ready with your counterexamples, right? Like, you better have some divisions ready in your mind before you say Tamadu, because show is going to be there in about 2 seconds, you know? And then you see a lot of guys in the background, they get lazy. Tamadu, duh. There's a show, and they go, you know, and then they don't have anything ready. And then everybody goes, bo-ta. Say, bo-ta. Ta means, you should be ashamed of yourself. Okay? Chop. Now you have lots of time to think about it. Give me any division of a changing thing. Come on. There's three, right? You can do it in English. I don't care. Yeah, physical matter, mental stuff, and how about anything that's not either? That's the third one, right? So it's a three. Now, here's the definition of a Yulchen. Now we're going to debate, and we'll be doing this for the rest of the 5-year course that ended 2 years ago. Which one is a Yulchen? Okay. How about friend Diane? Which one of those three? I'm assuming that emptiness can't be a subject, right? Emptiness can't perceive anything, right? So in which category do you wish to put Yulchen? Yulchen Kabasha. Okay. Where are you going to put Yulchen? Subjects. Where are we going to put subjects?
Mind.
Mind Yimata. Okay. Right? I said a tell, right? That's one of those. Oh, you telling me it's mine? You say what? Duh. Okay. Duh. Say duh.
Duh.
Yeah, if I had to choose between those three, mental thing, physical thing, or somewhere between, I'll choose the mental thing. Okay. Then I say, then I better have a counterexample ready, right? See, I've set this all up, you know, like hours ago, right? She can't go anywhere. You know, the minute she stepped into the debate ground, she was in trouble. Okay. So I have all my counterexamples ready. Kangsa Chi Chen. Okay. Kangsa Chi Chen. Kangsa Chi Chen. Kangsa Chi Chen. Oh, hey, let's talk about Magda again. Okay. Kangsa means person. You know, a person. Could be anybody. Okay. Tasha. Leon. Okay. Let's talk about Magda. You know. Subject Mayim Bata. Oh, poor Magda. I guess she can't be a subject then. Right? No, she's not physical. Oh, she's between, right? Remember? Magda is between. Magda possesses a body. Magda possesses a mind. But Magda is neither the mind nor the body. There's something else called Magda that possesses those two things, right? But you said Yulchen's subjects have to fit in the mental category. Like, we both agree that her mind is a subject. But according to you, poor Magda can't be a subject. She can't engage her object. She can't engage in an object. She can't have a Michael and Zoe shake. Like the worst thing that could ever happen, you know? So, Yulchen, Mayim Bata, you tell me she's not a subject, which means she can't go and buy a Michael and Zoe shake. She can't engage an object. Then you can say, it's both. How about both? So, your mind can be a subject, and you can be a subject. Why? Because you fit the definition. What's the definition? Any existing thing that can engage an object. Okay. Engage in an object. So what about her soup? Well, who should I pick on? Hummel's like half awake. What about her physical matter? Subject mayim be'etim. So I guess her physical, Magda's physical body can't be a subject. Subject mayim be'etim. Now you have three choices. You can say mayin, which means right, I agree. Of the three kinds of changing things, Magda can be a subject, and Magda's mind can be a subject. The mind is easy, right? She's seeing me right now. Okay. But can Magda's body be a subject? Mayin be'etim. Cannot be. Mayin be'etim. Say, Tamadu. Yeah, Tamadu. Okay. I mean, if you want to go that way, but you better have your counterexample. Okay, say, Mayinte. Mayinte. And why not? Okay, Mayinte means, you know, a colon. That's a colon. Te is a colon. Like you know if you study Tibetan. Te. Okay. Mayinte means, why not? Okay. May I ask why? Why not? No, we already covered the Dimitri. We all agree that Magda can be a subject. Because she can buy a Michael Zois shake. She can engage an object. And we all agree that Magda's mind, her visual consciousness, for example, is engaging an object right now, which is my red face and my bald head. Okay? But what about Magda's body? Can it be a subject? Subject mayim be'etim. And you said tamadru. Subject yimata. You telling me she can't be a subject? Her body? Duh. She said, duh. I think so. Yeah? Yinte? Why? Huh? That makes her an object. If you can see her, it means she's an object. I'm asking, can her body be a subject? Huh? Yeah, that's the answer. It's a perfect answer. Okay, her sense faculty. Okay, her eye. Her optic nerve. Okay, there's a patch of cells on the back of the eyeball that, according to Master Vasubandhu, 16 centuries ago. Can detect shapes and colors. And that's physical cells. You see what I mean? And they report to the mind what they're detecting. Okay? And that's an example of a physical matter which can be a subject. So all three categories of changing things can be a subject. Okay? Her eye faculty, which is physical, which reports to her visual consciousness what's going on. And then a moment later, her mental consciousness says, oh, I think this is Michael Roach's face or something like that, okay? And then obviously Magda as a person can be a subject because she can go buy something, okay? And obviously her mind, her visual consciousness, which says, oh, hey, he's got a red suit on, can also engage an object, you know? Okay? Okay? Hey, gonna debate, let's go. Okay, she said, if there's no visual awareness yet, then the eye faculty, the optic nerve, cannot engage in an object. Yeah, yimbatao. Okay, come on. Yimbatao. Okay, keji dambo chuchen, miki wambo keji dambo chuchen. Okay, take the first instant of a visual, of the optic nerve being aware of self, of being aware of shapes and colors. Okay. Okay. Yuchen mayim bata. Meata. Okay. Doesn't exist, right? It's not aware of its own. Oh. Yim bata. So it is aware. In the first instant, it's picking up color and shape. Is it picking up color and shape? It's not picking up color and shape? So you can poke somebody's eyes out and they can still see physical objects. So it has to come the moment before. It reports to the visual consciousness, this is going on. In fact, it creates the visual consciousness. It is the henjik cheken of the visual consciousness. It's the contributing factor that allows visual consciousness to grow at all. And if you don't think so, then, you know, poke your eyes out and see if you can see anything. You see what I mean? But in the first instant, it hasn't done what yet? It hasn't created a consciousness yet. Because that comes a millisecond after. Remember we said you're always 1 millisecond behind. I'm sorry. You know, you're never in the present. The present is happening a millisecond before you're aware of it, because the present creates your awareness of it. I'm using a very ambiguous word so I can get away with all the interpretations I want. It's my right. It's my right. Okay. I mean engage, I mean either the person buying the shake or the I consciousness being aware of redness or the optic nerve recording data. And that's what I mean by engage. So I can get away with all three that I want to. Yeah.
So can a tree be a subject?
That's a good. Say, Xing Chi Chen. Say, Xing Chi Chen. By the way, you want to learn Tibetan perfectly? Debate. You know. Why? You get to use colloquial. You get to say, hey, stupid head. You know. But you also get to use scriptural language. The language you use for debate has not changed in 2,000 years. You know what I mean? You're still using the same words that we used 2,000 years. It's like, hey, stupid head, thou art wrong. You know, and you learn all of Tibetan language very fast. It's extremely fast. So you say, Xing Chi Chen. You Chen Yin Ba Ta. Oh, take a tree. I guess it's in the subject. Then what's your thought? What are you going to say? Because why? No, you're you said, what about a tree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So leads to and turn themselves.
Say, Tema Loma Kumde Nyewe Echa. Say, Tema?
Tema.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Tema Loma Kumde Nyewe Echa. It is a debate. This debate already exists in the logic scriptures. Tema Loma Kumde Nyewe Echa means because the leaves curl up at night and go to sleep. Okay? Because they seem to respond in the same way that they respond to stimuli the same way that the eye consciousness does. Okay? And they say no, in Buddhism they say no. They say, I mean, I won't do the whole debate with you, but in Buddhist philosophy, in real Buddhist philosophy, the growth of a plant is very similar to the growth of a crystal, and it's not considered to be sentient life. It's not considered to have a mind.
Okay. Well, I'm saying that it's important to Elizabeth.
That it responds to stimulus?
Yeah, because that's what you're saying.
No, I said it transmits it to the consciousness. It engages its object.
Certainly a leaf must be engaging light.
I don't think so. Kamadu. That's not how I use the word engage. I say it's object, though, right? It's object. Engage its object.
If this is true, then the root would be a subject as well. Like any changing thing.
Why? Because it engages its object? I'd say that impacts it, but doesn't engage it. How's that? Engage in. Anyway. Okay, anyway. Right to Tashi, no one Tashi. Okay, we'll go on a little bit. The other way to get out of a debate is to change the subject, huh?
Does engage necessarily involve sentience?
In this case, yeah. In the way the word is used in this definition, it involves sentience. Yeah. And there's a big debate. I mean, the Japanese Buddhists believe that plants live. No traditional Buddhist in India ever said that. Nobody, you know. It's not a Buddhist belief. Period. You can emanate as a tree. I mean, it could be that a Buddha is emanating as a tree, but that would be like an illusion of a tree or something like that. But there is no Buddhist school from the Buddha that ever said that.
Why is it necessary that the flesh has to be a subject?
Sorry?
Why is it necessary that the flesh
flesh? Paksha Chuchin, Yujin Yimbata. Take pork. Dead pork meat in the store. Yujin Yimbata. Is it a subject?
No.
So it's I didn't say it was necessary. Okay. I didn't say kyabha, you said kyabha. Not all flesh is sentient. Huh? Steel reacts to heat, it's not sentient. It melts.
Outside doesn't matter. Where do you end?
Huh? Well, I would say that. I would say that. Could you have a case where there was an optic nerve working where there was no awareness of the optic nerve working? That's a tricky question. That's a tricky. There is a thing called nangla mangyepa. Say nangla mangyepa. Nangla mangyepa. And in fact, nangla mangyepa means you're watching TV, you're really engrossed in it, and your mom comes in and says, dinner's ready. And okay? And you don't hear her, okay? But we believe that there's been some, auditory nerve change, you know? So I think it might be possible to say that in theory it's possible. That the auditory nerve has... I didn't say it had to be aware. I'm just giving you an example where you don't have to be aware. But that's a temingi lo. That's a non-valid perception. Okay, in this school... Yeah, and in my definition, what? Seme shawar jawa. But in this school, nangla mangyepa is not a tema. It's one of the three kinds of temins. Okay?
But then, just nerve optics, right? Yeah. Optic nerves, registering sensory data.
Yeah.
Not a valid perception in the first place.
That's true. By the way,
so,
the two, out of the three yulchens, only one is a real yulchen, okay? How's that? So you win. But you should have said, how could your optic nerve have a tema? You see, how could Magda have a tema? Because Magda is not mind. How could Magda be a tema? You see what I mean? When Magda buys a Michael Zori shake, and I say that the subject is Magda herself, then you should have said, oh, then she's a mental thing, right? I say, why? She says, oh, because that shake is defined as an object because it's engaged by a valid perception. So that makes Magda a valid perception. Poor girl. We always thought she was a person, you know. All right, like that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a dejuriki gone, which means my division was a theoretical one and not a literal one. You see what I mean? Like when we divide what? Nirvana. And we talked about it. There's a natural nirvana, which is not a nirvana at all. Like when we divide the three. Telma. The three jewels, okay? Right? Like when you divide the three jewels, remember we had the same distinction in the Friday night class. One of them isn't a jewel at all. Like anyone who wears this an ordained person is only a symbolic sangha, okay? A Buddha image is only a symbolic Buddha. A Dharma book is only a symbolic Dharma, okay? They're not the real Dharma, not the real Buddha, not the real sangha, okay? What's the real sangha? Yeah, anyone who's seen emptiness directly, etc. So that we call a nominal division, which implies it's not a real division. And to be frank, you're correct, and your arguments are true, in that two of the three subjects that they mention in this text are not real subjects, because their objects are not objects by virtue of being apprehended by a valid perception, which was the definition of a subject. Object, sorry. Okay, we better do one more. Let's see. I won't give you the Tibetan for all those last three types because you know it, and I hereby exempt you from doing it on the homework, okay? All right, because we got to go on. Shepa, mental things can be divided into two kinds. Say rangrik, shenrik. Rangrik, shenrik. Rang means itself, right? Self. Rik means it knows itself. In psychology, this is called apperception. It means the ability of the mind to know itself. Self-awareness. How's that? Self-awareness. Okay. Sharing means awareness of something else other than itself. Shen means something else. And in the Buddhist logic schools, which are what? Do you remember which of the four great schools of ancient India they are? Mainly South Trantika. Okay, South Trantika, which is not the same as Svat Tantrika. Okay? All right. South Tra comes from Sutra. You can remember, these are the people who, sutrists, people who follow Sutra. Okay? They believe that all types of awareness can be divided into two, self-awareness and awareness of other things. What is the definition of self-awareness? It's called zinnam, which means the ability of the mind to be aware of itself at the same instant that it's perceiving something outside. For example, when I look at the blue of the pen, there's an awareness of the blue, but there's also an awareness of the looking at the blue. You see what I mean? There's an awareness of seeing the blue, and there's an awareness of the blue. And the awareness that I'm watching blue is called Rangrik in this school. Master Shantideva, if you remember, went through a long story of why, according to the Prasangika, the highest school of middle way, this is a wrong idea. Okay? And then they said, well, then how do you remember blue? How do you remember I saw blue if there was no self-awareness of seeing blue? See, I mean, like, tomorrow, when I'm sitting there at Michael and Zoe's having my 3 o'clock brownie, and I remember the class last night, and I say, I saw the pen, because I remember talking about the self-awareness thing, you know. Well, how do you remember that you saw the pen if there wasn't any self-awareness at that moment? And Master Shantideva would say, look, if you remember blue, you must have been there. There doesn't have to be some separate awareness of yourself at that moment. Okay? We're talking at the same moment, right? I mean, a millisecond later, you're aware of yourself. That's a different thing. They believe that at the very same instant that you see blue, you're already aware of yourself seeing blue. And the other schools say not necessarily. You know, if you can remember blue, then you must have been at the Quaker house holding the pen up, you know, or, you know, close to the pen. Right? That's all. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, no, it is the relevant thing.
You don't have to have awareness at the time that you're aware of some other thing. Yeah. Then you move back to the same thing you talked about last.
Yeah, you have an awareness. First you have an awareness of blue, and then later you have an awareness that you were aware of blue. You see what I mean? And it's a deduction.
Those are two different things.
If there was they are two different things. Yeah, one is a shenrik. The awareness of blue is an awareness of something else. And then rangrik in this school would be a simultaneous awareness that you are looking at blue. And it's proven by the fact that tomorrow you'll look back and say, I was looking at blue in this school. Okay? In this school. Okay. Anyway, don't worry about it. Higher schools say there's no such thing as the mind being aware of itself at the same moment that it sees something else. Okay? It is aware of itself in the next millisecond. That's okay. We say that's okay. There's another, these shenriks, and then we'll take a break, can be divided into sem. Say sem.
Sem.
Sem chung.
Sem.
Sem.
Sem
chung.
Sem chung.
The two divisions of the awareness of other objects, right? We finish with self-awareness of the mind. Okay, we're on to all your other kinds of consciousness, all your other kinds of mental events, okay? And the two kinds are called sem and semchung. Sem means main mind, your primary mind, primary consciousness, the mind itself. Semchung means all the mental functions running around in the mind. Like what? Well, there's some that accompany every state of mind. Like what? feeling, discrimination, attention, concentration. Bugs have thing and zin. Bugs have a form of samadhi. Why? They're able to focus on one object for an extended period of time, like 2 milliseconds. Okay? That's enough to call it ting and zin. Okay? Ting and zin, according to Abhidharma, every state, every mind in the universe has some ability to pay attention to something for a while, has some ability to concentrate on something for more than a millisecond. Okay? And these are all symptoms. Jealousy, anger, sleep, okay? Virtuous states of mind, these are all symptoms. In the Abhidharma system, there are 46. In the system that you're in, the Buddhist logic school, there are 51. And I'd love to do them, and we will do them, okay? Like in the next 18 months or so, we'll have a separate little 3-day course or something. We'll go through the whole thing. It's a very beautiful subject, Buddhist psychology. And I don't have time to do it tonight. It's 51 separate mental events, and they're very cool. They're very interesting. Like, by the way, Thupten Chinyi translated it about 100 years ago, was it? No. She translated the whole text, and she did a nice job on it. Even like the mind of pride, has had 9 different types and stuff like that. You know, so it's a very interesting subject you can get into. We'll stop there, and we'll take a break. We'll come back in about 10 minutes, okay? Okay, we had one division of mental things into two. What was that? Rangrik and Shinrik, okay? The mind knowing itself and the mind knowing other things, okay? There's another way to divide it. If your homework question was, you know, what's the way that those lower Buddhist logic schools think about it, you can say the mind knowing itself and the mind knowing other objects. And if it says, by the way, what's another division that you can make, okay? Here's the other one. Okay, say Tsema.
Tsema.
Tsemingilo.
Tsema.
Tsema.
Tsemingilo.
Another way to divide all mental things into two. Tsema, you know, is a valid perception. Valid perception. 99.9999999% of all your perceptions, okay? Semingilo means the opposite, okay? Lo means mental event or state of mind. Semin means which is not valid perception, okay? A mental event which is not a valid perception, okay? Semingilo. Examples of the non-valid are what you see on LSD, what you see when you're very drunk, what you see when you're very angry or jealous, you know, paranoias you have or misperceptions that you have due to strong emotions, things that happen, like in Tibetan they say the appearance of the trees moving because you're in a rowboat and you're rowing past them and it looks like the trees are moving, but actually on the shore. And actually it's you moving, but it looks like the trees are marching by, you know, and that's a typical example of a temingilo, a non-tema. That impression that the trees are walking by or something like that is an example. Yeah. It's true that all perceptions are tainted by that, yeah. That's a different story. That would be the distinction between correct and incorrect perception, whereas this is the distinction between valid and invalid. And that's a long story. And we should do it someday. That's Pramana Vartika's second chapter. It's fantastic. And we don't have time to do it tonight. That's not necessarily the distinction. Okay? Whether you know it or not. Okay.
What if you were just waking up and not quite?
That would be kind of like that. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you a very famous definition of tsema. Okay, very, very famous. Say sadhu.
Sadhu.
Milue.
Milue.
Rikpa.
Rikpa.
Sadhu.
Sadhu.
Milue.
Milue.
Rikpa.
Rikpa.
Very famous on the debate ground. It's like a mantra. Okay, sadhu means fresh. Okay, fresh. Like fresh vegetables, okay? Fresh. Milua means unerring. Unerring. You could say unmistaken, but it's just a little bit touchy. Okay? Unerring. Rigpa means, how do I translate it? Perception, okay? A fresh unerring perception, or a fresh unmistaken perception. Okay? Why do they say fresh? In this school, memory is not a tema. Okay? In this school, a memory is not a valid perception. They have a list of states of mind which are not valid perceptions. One is memory. Memory is not a valid perception in this school. In the higher school, it is. Okay? So the definition of tsema in Madhyamika, Prasangika, is milui rikpa. Okay, and they cut out the sartu, the fresh part. Okay, but in this school, you have to say fresh. Milua means unmistaken, rikpa means perception. Okay, that's the definition of a tsema, of a pramana, of a valid perception. There are two kinds of valid perceptions. Say munsum,
munsum.
Jepat.
Munsum,
jepat.
Jepat.
Munsum means a direct perception, like the perception of the color of this pen. Okay, that's a munsum, a direct perception. Your awareness of your thoughts would be a direct perception. In this school, self-awareness would be a direct perception. Okay? Those are all direct perceptions. They don't involve some kind of conceptualization in this school. Okay? They don't involve some kind of conceptualization. In the other schools, it's a touchy subject. Jepak involves conceptualization. The main type of Jepak is deduction. And I'm going to show you the three kinds of jepat. Okay, the three kinds of conceptual perception as opposed to direct perception. Direct perception, you're just seeing blue. You're not like, in this school, you're not going through some conceptual process about, oh, it's blue and blah, blah, blah. Okay? But for jepak, you have to go through some kind of conceptual process, especially in the case of deduction. You know, take sound, it's a changing thing because it's made. If based on that statement you perceive that sounds are changing things, you just had a jepak. Okay? You just had a deductive perception. You can see a lot of things with jepaks that you cannot see with munsums. Okay? Your first perceptions of emptiness are munsum or jepak? Jepak, okay? In Jorlam, the second of the five paths, path of preparation, is defined by increasingly more subtle intellectual deductive perceptions of emptiness. They are not direct perceptions. When you get to the path of seeing, path number three, Tonglam is a munsum, okay? Direct perception of emptiness. And that's the difference, okay? I'm going to give you three kinds of jepak, and then that'll be about it tonight. I said about it, okay? In the debate ground, you have to be very sensitive to words like primarily or mostly or pretty much, seems to me. Yeah. The three kinds of jepak, okay? The most famous one, the principal one. By the way, it's essential to understand that in Buddhism, in Buddhist philosophy, a jepak is as good as a munsum. Okay? Do you see the pen? Does a pen exist in this room? I mean, does a pen exist in my hand? Yeah. Okay. You know, is there a pen in my hand? Yeah, you didn't hear it hit the ground. You cannot see the pen with any direct perception, but you're using jetpot. Okay? Now you're perceiving the pen with jetpot. And in Buddhism, that's 100% as valid as munsum, as seeing it directly. And you have to get used to that. If you decide that there are future lives through deduction, they exist. That's a tsema. That's a pramana. Anything perceived with a pramana or a tsema or a valid perception exists. Okay? You don't have to see directly your future lives and your past lives to act on them, because you can deduce them. From what? Oh, anybody who knows Gyunde pretty well can deduce them. Okay, that difference between a nirlin and a sanjikta, difference between material cause and a supporting factor, contributing factor. If you understand it clearly, you can deduce that future lives and past lives exist. And then you don't have to think that you are, have any less perceived them than someone who directly after the path of seeing saw their future lives directly. Okay, your perception of future lives, if you understand through deduction that they exist, is 100% as valid, as good as the perception of someone who in a deep state of meditation saw their future lives directly. It's exactly as valid, and you have to get used to that. Okay, it's a tsema, and anything that a tsema sees is existing. Period. That's the definition of existence in Buddhism. So the next three kinds of jhepak they're going to see, you have to get used to the fact in Buddhist philosophy, if you perceive something with these, it exists as really as I'm holding the pen here. Okay? You have to get used to it. It's as valid. Ngutop. Say ngutop.
Ngutop.
Ngutop is deductive conceptual perception. Okay? Deduction. Based on a deduction. Based on logic. Okay? He had that blue thing in his hand. His hand moved like that. I didn't hear anything hit the floor. Ergo, the pen is still there. And that's a deduction. Okay? Pen, chu, chu. Okay? Consider the pen. Okay? Lapa la yute. It is in your hand. Because it was there the moment before and you put it around your back and I didn't hear anything hit the ground. Yin be chu. And you can say, yin be chu. Yin. Okay? Right? If you agree, you just repeat the verb, right? Yin. Yin. Yin beijia. Because it exists. Because it exists behind my back. Yin. Okay? And it's 100% as valid as seeing it in my head. Okay? Unless you're on acid or something. Okay. Ngutop. Say chakpa.
Chakpa.
Dharpa means famous or well known, like it's the kirti in Dharma Kirti and Chandra Kirti, okay? Lobsang Dharpa, which is Jetsun Kapa's monk's name. But in this sense, it means by convention, okay? By mutual convention, right? By the agreement of the whole world, or by the agreement of all the people who know that world. Like, do you like Uncle Sam or not? It's not April yet, but you can still dislike Uncle Sam. Okay, Uncle Sam, the perception of the federal government, when I say Uncle Sam, because you are aware of the convention that Uncle Sam refers to the government, is a jhepak. Okay, it's a conceptualization. Okay, you don't see Uncle Sam, you don't see the federal government, you don't conceptualize it directly in your mind when I say Uncle Sam. You go through a process. You say, oh, Uncle Sam. Yeah, federal government. You see, there's this conceptual process where you understand a convention that is not immediately recognizable from the words. He's not anybody's uncle, he's everybody's enemy. Right? And he says, Sam, Uncle Sam, oh yeah, it's not anybody's uncle, it's the federal government. You see what I mean? The classical example in Buddhist philosophy is the house of Mr. Rabbit. Okay? Mr. Rabbit's house. And, in Tibetan, it's Ribong Chen. Okay, say Ribong Chen. Ribong Chen. This is the man in the moon. Okay? In Asia, when you look up at the moon, they see a rabbit's head. Okay? They see a rabbit's head in a design there. So everybody knows when you say Mr. Rabbit's house is full today, you're talking about the moon. Okay? It's like Uncle Sam. Okay? So in scripture you might come across, oh, Drakpa Jepak, an example of conventional conceptual perception, valid, is Mr. Rabbit's house. And everybody knows, although you guys don't know, that it refers to the moon. That's all. These are conventions. They're not immediately recognizable from the word itself. Okay. Third kind. Say Yiche.
Yiche.
Jepak.
Yiche.
Yiche.
Jepak.
Yiche means rational belief. Okay? Rational belief. Yiche. And this is where you have a valid perception of something, that it really exists, because someone who is, for you, an unquestionable authority said so. Okay? Somebody who's unquestionably authoritative said so. Okay? And obviously, in Buddhism, it's very hard to qualify as an unquestionable authority. Okay? We're very picky about unquestionable authorities. Okay? And by the way, Tsema, Tseme Kebu, a prominent person in Buddhist scripture means a person who cannot lie. Okay, so the exercise in Buddhism is you have to establish that the person in question cannot lie. Okay. The Buddha, by the way, one of his first rules was, don't believe anything I say unless you check it out and it fits you and you've argued it and you've discussed it and you've debated it and you've come to believe it by logic and by reasoning and by thinking about it. But don't accept what I say just because I said it. Okay? He said that. Okay? And you have to live by that. And America has had enough beliefs where it was just believe anything, right? You know, you had it when you were a kid. You know, mom and dad said, you said, why? And they said, don't ask anymore. Just believe it. Okay? And you're in this class because you rejected that. Okay? So I don't want you to think you got to a point now in your Buddhist studies where Michael Roche got up and said, okay, there's a new kind of valid perception. Just believe whatever I say. You know? Okay? It's not like that. Rational belief. Okay? And it involves a preliminary step of establishing that that person or that authority cannot lie. Okay. Now, maybe you've met a person like that, or maybe you haven't. You know, but in Buddhist scripture, we allow for the possibility that there's a being who cannot lie, and that if you studied the question carefully, you could establish that there's a being who cannot lie. And then you just sit and listen, right? I mean, if first you've established that this person cannot lie and would never claim to have seen something without seeing it, you see what I mean? That's also implied. That then, after that, if they say there is a hell realm, you can take it to be Yiche Jepak, you know, based on rational belief in this person who is incapable of telling a lie and incapable of misrepresenting reality. They said it, so you can buy it. Okay, and then, but again, you have to personally establish them as unquestionable. Okay, and if you have not, then you're not allowed to have a Yiche Jepak. Okay, you cannot have a Yiche Jepak. But in the monastery and in your studies, you will reach a point where you will recognize certain people as being unquestionable. I mean, you get the feeling after a while, and you do certain tests, you do certain checks. And then you get to a point, like, if I see something in the computer, I get a hit. I go surfing for a certain idea. I get a hit. It's S5320, you know. I know this is Jetson Kappa's commentary on a certain text, you know. Okay, whatever it says, I can trust it. You see what I mean? And it's like that. Okay, and you have to get used to that possibility. We allow for it, okay, in the monastery. No. No. Not at all. By the way, why not accept everybody as an unquestionable authority? Because somebody will get up here the next night and say, it's okay to drink alcohol, or abortion is all right, you know, Or, you know, once you reach Tantra, you can do whatever the hell you want. You know, it's all beyond normal morality or something like that. Okay, that's all. If you just believe anybody who gets up here and starts talking, you will suffer. You see? You will continue to do things that make you suffer. You can't do that. It has to be logical. It has to fit with the rest of Buddhism. It has to be provable to you. And if you start buying everything that somebody says, even if they are wearing a red suit, even if they are said to, in the poster that you read, to be the Dalai Lama's best friend, which he got so many best friends, I can't believe it, you know. No. What they say has to be provable to you. What anyone says in Buddhism. The Buddha himself said, don't believe what I say. Check it out. Okay? And that has to remain a rule in American Buddhism. Or else we'll get all kinds of voodoo and all kinds of weird things, and you will get hurt from that. Okay? Yeah. He said, how can you call the Buddha a person who never lies if we all know that when he was teaching people of lesser capacity, the Buddha often simplified things to the point where technically it wasn't true anymore. Okay? For example, the Buddha taught self-awareness. There's a scripture where the Buddha teaches self-awareness. When you get to the higher schools of Buddhism, they say that's not correct. It doesn't exist. Okay? He taught it as such and such a Buddhist school. You see what I mean? He presented it as a such and such a Buddhist school. And you have to say it that way. There's a subject called tangye, the art of interpretation. How do you know when the Buddha was speaking literally? And how do you know when the Buddha was speaking figuratively? Lord Buddha said, kill your father and kill your mother. He meant, if you're not able to practice the spiritual life well, at home, staying with your parents, then move out and go stay somewhere else. Okay, that's what he meant. And you have to know how to interpret the Buddha. You know, how do you know when he was speaking literally, and how do you know when he wasn't? We're going to cover that subject in around October, November. We're going to have a whole course on it. Chang'e will be the last formal course of this whole thing. Okay, so that'll be the subject. So hang around till then. All right. All right. One more thing. I try to give you a little bit of formal logic every night, okay? We've been through reason, which was defined as... Oh, wait. Nobody on earth could ever give a definition of a reason. Takitsen ishaki mebe echa. Okay? Takitsen ishaki mebe echa. You say? I say, nobody in the planet could give me a definition of a reason. Say, tamadu. Tamadu. Wrong. Okay? That's not correct to say. Oh, takitsen ishaki yata. Are you telling me that you could? Duh. Okay, say, duh. Shok. Shok. Yeah, anything you put forth as a reason. Anything you give as a reason. Takitsen yimata. You telling me that's a reason? Definition reason? Duh. Okay? You know how faxes send a, I forget what they call it. There's a confirmation signal or something. It confirms that it sent itself or something like that. So at the end of that, this is the whole exchange. It goes like this. Nobody on the earth could give me the definition reason. And she says, wrong. She says, oh, are you telling me somebody could give me the definition? Right. Duh. What is it? And then she said, anything you put forth as a reason. I said, is that the definition of a reason? And she says, duh. That last thing, that last step is a reconfirmation. Okay, I'm just checking. Is that what you meant to say? And you say, duh. What do you want to do about it? You know, duh. All right. So, taksukupa, tayandaki teni, yimbata. So I guess any reason you put forth is a good reason, right? Yimbata. Why did you say that?
I didn't say
it. Yeah, it's like, I didn't say that. Who said that? Okay, who said that? Say, chi-chi.
Chi-chi.
Teacher.
Teacher.
Okay, when do you use teacher? When I say, oh, so I guess anything I put forth as a reason is a good reason. I added a word, right?
Right.
And you say, teacher, you know. Why do you say that? You know, who said that? Okay, so there's two, what you have to learn tonight is just that. There's two answers to a tell statement. There's two answers to that sarcastic statement we talked about last week, last class, you know. I come down with a tell, right? Are you tell, oh, so I guess anything I put forth as a reason is a good reason. Okay, and she says, teacher, who said that? Okay, got it? If I end with cheer, she has three options. Right, meaning repeat what I said, is or has, okay? Or she can say, tagmadrup, which means wrong. Or she can say, kevamachin, which means you're right, but it doesn't necessarily prove what you're trying to prove. That we had already. Okay. Then last class we had my response to her. Oh, are you telling me anything I put forward as a reason is a definition of reason? And she says, duh. So to tell, when I go down on a tell, yimbatao, she can say, duh, right? That's what I said. What do you want to do about it? Okay, duh. Okay. Then I do my reconfirmation to her, but I'm being sneaky. I'm changing it slightly, okay? Oh, are you telling me the definition of reason of a good reason is anything I put forth as a reason? And then she says what?
Teacher.
Say teacher.
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 Who said that? Why, wherefore? Okay, it means teacher, all right? Now you know all the responses in a debate. If you think about it, you only have five choices, right? If I say, because nobody could give me a reason, could give me the definition of reason, she says, tamadu, wrong, okay? And if I say, the sky is green because it has a color, kyabamachum, nice. Okay. Say chapa machum. Chapa machum. Sometimes you just go chapa. Okay. Chapa machum. Which means duh, of course it has a color. That doesn't prove it's green. Okay? See, if you said tamadrup, what would it mean? This guy doesn't have a color. You can't say tamadrup. You see, you can't say wrong. Okay? What did I say? Oh, consider this guy it's green because it has a color. You can't say tamadrup, because then you'd be saying it doesn't have a color. You have to say, not necessary. Just because it has a color doesn't prove it's green. Then you say, kyaba machum. Say, kyaba? Machum. Kyaba machum. But now I say, the sky has a color because it's blue. Right. You could just go like, by the way, you don't say duh, okay? Duh is only a response to my sarcastic one. Are you telling me the sky has a color? Duh. Duh. Okay? Are you telling me the sky has a color? Right. So the sky is a changing thing. I'm sorry, unchanging thing, right? Teacher! Who said that? Okay. I didn't say that. Who said that? Okay, you got to get used to those five answers, okay? One is to disagree, right. One is tamadu, which is wrong. One is kelamatum. Oh, yeah, what you say is right. Consider the sky, it's green because it has a color. Yeah, I agree the sky has a color, but that doesn't prove it's green. Okay? Kabamachum. Now, if I come down with a towel, are you telling me the sky is blue? Right. Duh. Okay. Oh, so you're telling me the sky is green, right? Teacher. Who said that? Okay, teacher. So you got five basic answers now. Okay, we'll check. We'll do a few next week. Okay, but that is all the answers in a monastic debate. And if you know those five, and if you could understand the language, then sooner or later you reach the truth about any given question. It's great. It's really interesting. In the confines or the restrictions of those five answers, you can reach the truth about any subject. It's very cool. Okay, that's all you need to engage in a Tibetan monastic debate. You know, you could be a real geshe in like a week, probably. You know, because that's all you need is to answer. You know, you can fake a debate in the monastery too. You know, you just say, Tamadu. And they say, duh. And you don't even know what the guy's asking you. You know, chicha. You know, you can go on like that for like 10 minutes, you know. And they don't know what that, I mean, pretty soon it reaches like it's crazy, you know. Like you agreed this guy is green and blue and everything else, you know. But, you know, if you can't hear the guy very well, you can always just take a shot, you know. And that's an option. Okay. Three kinds of good reasons. And then we really are done tonight, okay? Three kinds of good reasons. How do you say good reason, by the way? Correct reason. Dak Yang Dat. First chapter of Paramivartika. Chokchu Deite Kyapa Yi Tense Deni Namsun Ni. There's only three kinds of correct reasons are possible. Okay? Dak Yang Dat means correct reason. First one is called a say deta yanda deta yanda deta de means debu. You had it last class. What is it? A result. Okay, a result. An effect or a result. Okay. Dak yang dak means a good reason. So a good reason which involves a result. Okay? A good reason which involves a result. I'll give you the most famous example in Buddhist scripture for the last 13 centuries. Okay? Say, Dudengi,
Lala,
Lala,
Chechen,
Tua Yote,
Me,
Yubecha. Another, again, Dudengi,
Lala,
Chechen,
Tua
Yote, I'm sorry, screwed it. Me Yote,
Tua
Yubecha. Dudengi Lala Chechen means consider a mountain pass where there's a big cloud of smoke. In Tibet, you're sitting in the Lhasa Valley and you're looking out towards Depung, that inferior Great Depung Monastery, and there's a mountain pass behind it and you see this huge cloud of smoke. Okay? Dudengi Lala Chechen. Consider a mountain pass covered with smoke. Okay. Meyete. Say,
Meyute.
There must be a fire over there. Meyute. Tua Yubecha. Say,
Tua
Yubecha. Because there's a big cloud of smoke over there. Okay, and that's the classic correct reason where the reason is a result. Okay, and that's the first of the three types. Okay, to think a lot of Chuchen, Meyute, Tua Yubecha. Okay. Consider a mountain pass covered with smoke. Hey, there must be a fire over there because there's smoke. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Okay, and that's a classic proof in Buddhism. First kind. The reason to learn all these is to learn all the different ways you can prove emptiness. And you must do it tayepa. Say tayepa.
Tayepa.
Rigpa tayepa. Very famous in Majjhimika. You must be able to prove emptiness 1,000 different ways. Okay? By the time you see emptiness directly, you better be able to prove it about 1,000 different ways. Okay? And all of these are for the purpose of establishing emptiness. I mean, we're trying to get at emptiness. And we're going to use all these tools. You have to have a huge toolbox. When you go into your 1 month retreat to try to see emptiness directly, you better have a big toolbox to take with you. And it's going to be all these different reasons that you understand about emptiness. And you cannot perceive it directly without understanding many different ways of proving it. And that's the whole point of doing this class. Okay, it's not a boring, it may be boring, but it's not a meaningless class in logic. There's a very specific goal in mind. If you get good at this, the odds that you will see emptiness directly in this life are very much higher. If you never get good at this, the odds are very lousy. Okay, so you have to work on it. Okay. Number two. Say Rangshin.
Rangshin.
Dayanda.
Rangshin.
Dayanda. It's called a correct reason of nature. And I'm not going to go over it tonight. I just want you to know the name of it. Okay, that's on your homework. You don't even have to explain it. Okay? We're going to get to it next week. Okay? It's correct reason based on some kind of nature. Okay? Say, mamikbe.
Mamikbe.
Dayanda.
Dayanda.
Mamikbe.
Mamikbe.
Dayanda.
Dayanda.
Mamikba means the absence of something. Okay? The absence of something. These are correct reasons that are used to prove the absence of something. And we'll get into that about two classes from now. Okay? Most of the proofs of emptiness are mamikbe talks. Why? Emptiness is simply the absence of a self-existent thing that never existed anyway and could not have existed. Okay, I think you've got to get used to that. It's not like we're denying something that ever was there. It never could be there, never will be there, isn't there now. Okay? There's a mental idea of a self-existent thing, right? Until you can understand what you think is there, you can't ever establish that it's not there. But the actual thing that you think is there, forget it. Never was there, never could be there. Gotcha. Okay? The thing that we deny. The thing that was never there anyway. Okay? And we're trying to prove the lack of it. The absence of it. The emptiness of it. Okay? So that's where we're headed. Alright? We'll just go straight to some prayers. Alright?
One question?
Yeah.
Loophole, right?
Yeah.
Section by
Yeah.
The false deduction.
No, because we're talking divisions of Sema. Divisions of
if
correct.
You put your pen behind your back, right?
Yeah.
And somehow I have a section of that pen behind your back by some crazy enlargement of it.
That's not a ngotop. Yeah. You can come to a correct conclusion by wrong reasoning. It's not a jepat. It's not a Sema. Okay. All right.
Sāsī bhūhī yuṣṣī metā chāṁ virāviṁśī nyandē yampādī sāṅgē śindhū mitte uvāhī jokū nāndā śivā śivā
is the end of Class 5.
You have been listening to The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute.
The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to The Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.